Campus FM presents The Probe, produced and presented by Monique Chambers. Welcome to The Probe with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Milena Dobreva, who's an associate professor in the Department of Library Information and Archive Sciences here at the University of Malta. So that's quite some job title.
Yes, hello to everyone. Actually, we are a very compact department, but we cover several great areas, and it's fun to work here.
So what do you do there? What does the department actually do in general?
We train and we teach students. We also work with library and archive professionals. So we have a larger role than just providing education here in the university. Currently, we offer two diplomas, one in library and information science and one in archives and records management. The second one is something which we actually offer to civil servants. We have a deal with OPM, and they direct to us civil servants who are not trained to university level. We also have a bachelor in information and knowledge management, quite a new looking area in our department. And we started offering a master's in documentary heritage and militensia. The master's obviously addresses local needs.
So, with all of that, you lecture as well as...
Yes, actually, since we are quite compact, I teach every year about 10 different study units, which range from research methods to the areas of digital libraries, digital archives, introduction to information professionals in the ICT area. From these three areas, library, information and archive sciences, actually my specialization is in information science.
Okay. And are the courses popular? Because being a librarian today, or you know, being in charge of archives, is now a much different role, I would imagine, than it would have been in the past.
Yes, that's exactly our biggest role here, because these are areas which change very rapidly. When I arrived to Malta about 4 years ago, our department had the diplomas and the bachelor, which had to be refreshed exactly with these new areas. And this was my first task here. I also work a lot, as I mentioned. We are in touch with colleagues from the sector, and we are very well aware how much change is necessary also there.
Sorry, you said about research. Mm-hmm. What do you do? How do you help researchers?
Well, that's a big role of librarians and archivists these days. They obviously, especially those who work in academic libraries or in research libraries, or the archivists are helping everyone who wants to deepen their knowledge. What is very interesting these days is that the research itself opens up. It starts to attract more people who are not professionally trained to do research, but there is the big trend of being more participatory, involving people who have interests to do something. Archives, for example, traditionally work with people who are interested in genealogy, who want to find out about their family roots, but there are also local historians and other people who are not professionally trained, but they want to go deeper and expand their knowledge. So my personal research interests are in these areas of participatory approaches to cultural heritage, but obviously this is just one area. There is a big role of libraries to expand literacy and also to expand knowledge.
So is there a sort of a methodology to get the best out of research? Is that something that you pass on to academics, students, and obviously other people researching their genealogy, etc.?
What we are concerned is how to help patrons of libraries and archives, those people who would come to search for something. This is only a small fragment of our courses. And for anyone doing research, obviously there are lots of questions depending on their methodology, how they're going to collect their data and what they're going to do with them. But anyone who does research starts from a stage which we call literature review. So inevitably they have to consult what research had been done before.
Okay. And that's something you can help them with here?
Well, we have to teach our students how to do their research, but also we have to teach them how to help people who do all sorts of different types of research. And these days, being democratic and involving more people and trying to communicate the outcomes of research to the wider audience seems very positive. But let me give an example which is a bit controversial. Maybe a couple of weeks ago, many of the listeners to this program have seen on social media the big titles about the connection of loving gin and tonic and having a psychopathic personality. So a researcher did a research. She found that there is a connection, but this is only one thing which is related to our taste preferences and our personality. And this was presented as a fact. Well, it's just one tiny bit. So being democratic is great, but also we have to be careful and to present the outcomes of research up to standards which don't allow to twist facts like this. I personally like gin and tonic, and I hope that I'm not psychopathic, but I just wanted to give an example of something which goes into the public space and can be twisted very easily.
A lot of research is actually used as clickbait and, you know, just to get headlines. Yes. You sometimes hear of studies that are done and you sort of think the answer is obvious. Why have they actually had to tell you that? But then reading further into the research, you might actually find something of more interest. So how wide should research be? How deep should people go? Is there an nth degree? Is it just to find out something new, or is it to verify some facts that you already have?
I actually think personally, that's a personal opinion, that research today is in crisis, and part of it is that it is dominated by the research funding landscape, which actually says what areas are of interest to the society. And initially this looks great, but if you want to demonstrate that your research is in demand, that you are successful to attract funding, you obviously need to align your areas with what is in the research programs. And sometimes this is really very much needed and up to date, but this means that there are vast areas of other potential research which remain obscure, not in demand, and they still need to be supported. So I think that we face generally that's something which happens in the overall research funding landscape.
Okay.
The priorities for research need to be wider than just those areas which are in immediate societal demand.
So which areas do you feel need more promotion?
I'm generally concerned about the humanities as such, because in the European community funding programs, there are very limited opportunities to do humanities, and there is a huge push for the digital humanities, which I personally like very much, but I don't think that this is fair to other areas of humanities research.
And is that something that can be worked on here at the University of Malta to, you know, push its popularity so that maybe more research funding can be made available for this area, or is it it's a global?
This is a sort of a European trend, but I think that we see it also in other parts of the world. In Malta, we are not still working under very big demands on how much research funding we should generate. So we don't face this problem as severely as colleagues in other countries, which is great actually, but I think that it's good to have more general awareness and to promote these areas which otherwise can remain obscure. This is also very important when we discuss areas of national importance, so the areas of national history, national language, all these debatable topics here in Malta. Obviously, they attract a lot of interest, and I would be happy to see more support for them, because if in the future one would expect that these areas will be supported externally, then capturing interesting facts about Malta, its history, its language, its customs, its general development over the century would become difficult.
So now you, but this information is something that you, as a library, you're collecting as well and teaching?
Well, we are concerned with how to collect and how to document and how to preserve information in the future. For many centuries, the books were dominating the information space. Now we have to understand better how digital information can be organized in a better way and preserved for the future. Quite often people think that the digital is there forever, but that's not true. It can be very easily harmed and lost. And, for example, at the moment, I'm helping with a project which is funded by the Malta Arts Council. It's called Relink Indelible Narratives. And its aim is to collect data about tattoos done in the beginning of the 20th century. Okay. So that seems maybe strange why somebody who does library and information science would look into tattoos. But if you think how tattoos can be documented, it's actually a very interesting case, because obviously they're on someone's skin. When this person passes away, the tattoo is lost, but each tattoo is linked to history. And it's interesting how to gather the images and the histories of those people, why they wanted to have this particular tattoo, what were the circumstances, what was their statement. And this can be documented, so it's an interesting case to look into.
Excellent. And is that actually, or how is that actually going to be promoted and published? Is that a book itself, or is that going to be something digital?
We actually want to try a digital exposure for this, and we will experiment with putting some of the material we are collecting on the institutional repository of our university, which besides playing a major role in collecting the research output of academics, now also starts to play a larger role in collecting research materials. So this could be data from research, as in our case, and that's a very interesting area by itself. I am not quite sure when this program will be aired, but next week we have an open access week, and the library will be once again showing what is being done in this area of access to research, both publications but also research data.
So when is Open Access Week, or not when is it? What's it all about?
It's about providing access to research outcomes to the general public, to everyone. This is a very big movement, because there is this rationale that after we have a society paying and supporting research, it's not fair for the research publications to be closed only to people who are subscribed to academic journals. And the big motivation is how to make research outcomes accessible to everyone.
Is this just a Malta initiative, or is this something that happens across the EU?
It's actually a global movement.
Oh, okay. Okay, and it happens the same time across the world, or it just happens as it's suits each country?
To strengthen the message, actually, different open access activities are organized all over the world, and this helps to inform people and to bring new people on board, including the students who can see that research these days is done in a different way.
So not just sitting behind their desk on the internet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what types of things could we find out in this open access? What are the most random subjects you can think of that could we could go and find out research on? Obviously tattoos is fascinating now I want to know all about them, but I don't think that's going to be ready for this year. What other sort of out their subjects.
The Open Access Week promotes this aspect of openness. It's not really focused on a particular research subject, but what is important is the principle behind research, that research needs not only to be done well, but also to be communicated well and to reach wider audiences, not just the fellow researchers across the world. And we also will look this year into how the open access actually changes one very interesting area of scientometry. This is how we measure the scientific output, how we can put a sort of a quantitative estimate, how popular is particular researcher or a particular department or a particular scientific journal.
Okay. So you have that sort of like the league tables.
Yes.
Do you have that information ready, or is that something that just gets communicated in through the Open Access Week?
It will be communicated through the Open Access Week.
Okay. If you've just joined us, you've joined The Probe with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Milena Dobreva, who's the Associate Professor in the Department of Library Information and Archive Sciences at the University of Malta. So tell us a bit more about the Books and Literacy Conference that's celebrated during Book Week.
Yes, we are co-organizing jointly with the National Book Council and with the Malta Library and Information Association a day in which we will discuss how the concept of literacy is changing over time. Everyone knows that the libraries played a huge role in literacy, and when the public libraries became very popular, actually they had a very big role in being educational centers for people who didn't have the money to go to an educational institution and pay for structured education. So that's something in the past. These days, libraries are changing and their roles are changing. Lots of information circulates in the digital world, and this issue of what is the information literacy of the different generations is becoming more and more fundamental within a whole bouquet of different literacies we talk about. So we can talk about digital media literacies. This covers to what extent we know how to use different digital appliances, devices, and how we can do what we want to do with them. We have the information literacy, which is a bigger term, and it is about to what extent we are able to formulate what we are looking for, what we are searching for, and how we can build a very well-constructed search so that we are sure that we will find the bits and pieces we need. It's not easy at all, because we really are living in a time of information overflow. But there are also critical aspects, to what extent we can say that we not only discovered what we need, but we can trust what bits and pieces we found out there in the digital space. That's another very essential skill for today and the future. So we will go through these different topics, how literacy and the idea of literacy changed over time, and what are the new aspects of literacy which need to be tackled. There is also a lot of research happening around this topic. For example, one of our foreign speakers, Lara Dodd from the University of Northumbria, is currently doing a PhD on the digital skills of the young generation. We often hear that the Google generation has all the skills to use devices, but actually if you work with young people, you know that they are good at certain things, but this doesn't mean that they have the skills to search systematically, to critically appraise what they have discovered, and to use it in their learning experiences or in their everyday life.
So when you're putting together programs like this, you're working with universities around the world as well. This is something it's like it just doesn't affect Malta itself.
Yes, actually for this event we have the input of the Malta Literacy Agency, we have the input of Malta libraries, of the public library system, of school libraries, of academics from the university, of people who are writing books for children. We really wanted to engage different stakeholders, and this is like a mini research project on its own right. What are the topics which are not only emerging but which attract a lot of interest? Can we push the thinking one step ahead? Can we arrive to something which is still not known and discussed widely in the space around?
So do you teach people how to search as well, not just to do the research, but even the keywords and the information that you need to find? Because obviously if I wanted to look for something and you wanted to look for something, we might use different words, different terms completely. So is that part of the education process?
We actually have a study unit on information literacy in our programs, but I also think that the library offers during the fresher week a general awareness course, which helps to know at least how to search within our academic library.
And then there's obviously other research people can do on the internet, market research, talking to people, etc., etc.
Yes.
If they're going around. And do you teach people to do other forms of research as well, or it's literally based for library research? Because there's sort of different responses and different weighting. So if you speak to somebody, their answer is going to be different to something you might find in a journal or something. Do you teach that whole aspect of how to do research, or is purely research that's within a library?
We teach our students how to do research in our areas of study. Obviously, we are not competent to offer research methods courses for students who do chemistry or mathematics or other subject areas. However, when you look in a library or in archives, you would meet all sorts of people coming there, and you would have to be able to assess what are their information needs, what they're looking for, and to help them with this. There is a big area in the current library scene of research libraries which specialize in particular areas. For example, there is the medical library of our university, and the staff there is more aware about what medical students or doctors would be needing. So in this sense, we often hear when we interview our students that they apply to our programs because they love books. But that's the least relevant thing which we need. One needs to love structures, information, be a bit of a detective, so that they could actually assess what someone is searching for and how to find it. Before, there were librarians with really encyclopedic knowledge, and if somebody would come with a question, they would know where to look for this answer. These days, we are spoiled with Google and with digital search, but in a way, there is a danger to make our searches more shallow, because you put several keywords, you get some very quick answers, but this doesn't mean that you arrive to the crux of the matter. And obviously, an information professional or a library professional could help to go deeper, but it's always the person who does research who should assess how much they want to know and how far they want to go in their research. I think that any research can be endless. We have to put an end when we do our personal research, or we work in a research team, because we cannot continue forever, but you can always find more and more. Here, this reminds me one anecdotal story about someone who wanted to study paleography. This is the work with historical manuscripts.
Okay.
And when this young person met their supervisor, they got a very unusual task. They got a fish, and they had to find out in the next days everything about this fish. So fish is not a manuscript, but obviously this was an exercise how much in detail you can go in something which you are not really prepared to describe. And the person was quite frustrated because they observed this fish cut from here, there, and told that they discovered everything. And their supervisor was never happy with what they found and was saying, you have to find more details and more details and more details. So in a way, we can be in this spiral of going more into more details and going deeper.
But, you have to put a timeline on it, because research itself, gathering the information, spending time to go through it, potentially having to travel, and then putting it together can cost quite a lot.
Yes, and that's one of the major information literacy skills, is actually to put a proper, well-informed research question, to know what you are looking for, because if your question is very vague, then you will circle around and you... It's a bit like Alice in the Wonderland. You don't know where you are going, so you can potentially go all places.
No, you do see a lot of very badly structured market research going around, you know, on the Facebook and things like that. And you see if that gets used in theses, that if it's badly structured, you know, you're going to get bad answers. And so if that keeps going forward, you're going to end up with bad information in the archives at the end of the day. So I think what you're doing there, teaching people to research properly, is very important, and I hope all students take advantage of it, actually, so that libraries can stay strong. So what's the best piece of research you think you've done yourself?
A few years ago, I was coordinating a project which looked at the so-called user needs in priorities for digitization. This was across the UK higher education institutions, across their libraries, archives and museums. And in this project, we looked at the needs of end users. So these are the people who would go and do research in a library. But we also looked at the points of view of intermediaries. These are the librarians, archivists, museum specialists, which work with these end users. And what was quite unexpected was that the views of the end users and of the intermediaries who actually know what the users want were different. So we arrived to priorities, which were not overlapping 100%, so this was a surprise. But when you do research, you have to be open for such surprises, because if you predefine what you want to find, obviously you will miss the point.
Exactly, you close your books before you've actually got to the end of the story.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for joining me. You've been listening to The Probe with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week was Milena Dobreva, who's the Associate Professor in the Department for Library Information and Archive Sciences at the University of Malta. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have just listened to The Probe, produced and presented by Monique Chambers.